Janie saw her life like a great tree in leaf, with the things suffered, things in joy, things done and undone. Dawn and doom was in the branches. I know exactly what I got to tell you, but it's hard to know where to start at. I ain't never seen my papa, and I didn't know him if I did. My mama neither. She was gone from around there long before I was big enough to know. My grandma raised me, my grandma and the white folks she worked with. She had a house out in the backyard, and that's where I was born. They was quality white folks up there in West Florida, named Washburn. She had four grandchildren on the place, and all of us played together, and that's how come I never called my grandma nothing but Nanny, because that's what everybody on the place called her. And Nanny used to catch us in our devilment and lick every young'un on the place, and Miss Washburn did the same. I reckon they never hit us a lick amiss, because them three boys and us two girls was pretty aggravating, I spec. I was with them white children so much till I didn't know I wasn't white until I was around 6 years old. Wouldn't have found out then, but a man come along taking pictures, and without asking anybody, Shelby, that was the oldest boy, he told them to take us. Around a week later, the man brought the picture for Miss Washburn to see and pay him, which she did. Then give us all a good licking. So when we looked at the picture and everybody got pointed out, there wasn't nobody left except a real dark little girl with long hair standing by Eleanor. That's where I was supposed to be. But I couldn't recognize that dark child as me. So I asked, "Where's me? I don't see me." Everybody laughed, even Mr. Washburn. Miss Nellie, the mama of the children who come back home after her husband dead, she pointed to the dark one and said, "That's you, Alphabet. Don't you know your own self?" They all used to call me Alphabet because so many people had done name me different names. So I looked at the picture a long time, and I seen it was my dress and my hair. So I said, "Oh, I'm colored." Then they all laughed real hard. But before I seen the picture, I thought I was just like the rest. Us lived there having fun till the children at school got to teasing me about living in the white folks' backyard. There was a naughty head gal named Mayrella that used to get mad every time she looked at me. Miss Washburn used to dress me up in all the clothes her grandchildren didn't need no more, which was still better than what the rest of the colored children had. And then she used to put hair ribbon on my head for me to wear. That used to rile Mirella a lot, so she would pick at me all the time and put some others up to do the same. They pushed me away from the ring plays and make out they couldn't play with nobody that lived on premises. Then they tell me not to take on over my looks because they mama told them about the hound dogs hunting my papa all night long, about Mr. Washburn and the sheriff putting the bloodhounds on the trail to catch my papa for what he'd done to my mama. They didn't tell about how he was seen trying to get in touch with my mama later on so he could marry her. No, they didn't talk that part of it at all. They made it sound real bad so as to crumple my feathers. None of them didn't even remember what his name was, but they all knowed the bloodhound part by heart. Nanny didn't love to see me with my head hung down, so she figured it would be more better for me if us had us a house. She got the land and everything, and then Miss Washburn helped out a whole heap with things. Phoebe's hungry listening helped Janie to tell her story. So she went on thinking back to her young years and explaining them to her friend in soft, easy phrases, while all around the house, the nighttime put on flesh and blackness. She thought a while and decided that her conscious life had commenced at Nanny's gate. On a late afternoon, Nanny had called her to come inside the house because she had spied Janie letting Johnny Taylor kiss her over the gatepost. It was a spring afternoon in West Florida. Janie had spent most of the day under a blossoming pear tree in the backyard. She had been spending every minute that she could steal from her chores under that tree for the last 3 days. That was to say, ever since the first tiny bloom had opened, it had called her to come and gaze on a mystery. From barren brown stems to glistening leaf buds, from the leaf buds to snowy virginity of bloom. It stirred her tremendously. How? Why? It was like a flute song forgotten in another existence and remembered again. What? How? Why? This singing she heard that had nothing to do with her ears. The rose of the world was breathing out smell. It followed her through all her waking moments and caressed her in her sleep. It connected itself with other vaguely felt matters that had struck her outside observation and buried themselves in her flesh. Now they emerged and quested about her consciousness. She was stretched on her back beneath the pear tree, soaking in the alto chant of the visiting bees, the gold of the sun, and the panting breath of the breeze, when the inaudible voice of it all came to her. She saw a dust-bearing bee sink into the sanctum of a bloom. The thousand sister calyxes arched to meet the love embrace, and the ecstatic shiver of the tree from root to tiniest branch, creaming in every blossom and frothing with delight. So this was a marriage. She had been summoned to behold a revelation. Then Janie felt a pain, remorseless, sweet, that left her limp and languid. After a while, she got up from where she was and went over the little garden field entire. She was seeking confirmation of the voice and vision, and everywhere she found and acknowledged answers, a personal answer for all other creations except herself. She felt an answer seeking her, but where? When? How? She found herself at the kitchen door and stumbled inside. In the air of the room were flies tumbling and singing, marrying and giving in marriage. When she reached the narrow hallway, she was reminded that her grandmother was home with a sick headache. She was lying across the bed asleep. So Janie tipped on out of the front door. Oh, to be a pear tree, any tree in bloom, with kissing bees singing of the beginning of the world. She was 16. She had glossy leaves and bursting buds, and she wanted to struggle with life, but it seemed to elude her. Where were the singing bees for her? Nothing on the place nor in her grandma's house answered her. She searched as much of the world as she could from the top of the front steps and then went on down to the front gate and leaned over to gaze up and down the road, looking, waiting, breathing short with impatience, waiting for the world to be made. Through pollinated air, she saw a glorious being coming up the road. In her former blindness, she had known him as Shiftless Johnny Taylor, tall and lean. That was before the golden dust of pollen had beglamoured his rags and her eyes. In the last stages of Nanny's sleep, she dreamed of voices, voices far off but persistent and gradually coming nearer. Janie's voice. Janie talking in whispery snatches with a male voice she couldn't quite place. That brought her wide awake. She bolted upright and peered out of the window and saw Johnny Taylor lacerating her Janie with a kiss. Janie? The old woman's voice was so lacking in command and reproof, so full of crumbling dissolution, that Janie half believed that Nanny had not seen her, so she extended herself outside of her dream and went inside of the house. That was the end of her childhood. Nanny's head and face looked like the standing roots of some old tree that had been torn away by storm, foundation of ancient power that no longer mattered. The cooling Palmer Christi leaves that Janie had bound about her grandma's head with a white rag had wilted down and become part and parcel of the woman. Her eyes didn't bore and pierce. They diffused and melted Janie, the room, and the world into one comprehension. Janie, you're a woman now. So, no, Nanny, no. I ain't no real woman yet. The thought was too new and heavy for Janie. She fought it away. Nanny closed her eyes and nodded a slow, weary affirmation many times before she gave it voice. Yeah, Janie, you's got your womanhood on you. So I might as well tell you what I've been saving up for a spell. I wants to see you married right away.
Me? Married? No, Nanny, no ma'am. What I know about a husband?
What I seen just now is plenty for me, honey. I don't want no trashy nigger. No breath and britches like Johnny Taylor using your body to wipe his foots on.
Nanny's words made Janie's kiss across the gatepost seem like a manure pile after a rain.
Look at me, Janie. Don't sit there with your head hung down. Look at your old grandma.
Her voice began snagging on the prongs of her feelings.
I don't want to be talking to you like this. Fact is, I done been on my knees to my maker many a time, asking please for him not to make the burden too heavy for me to bear.
Nanny, I didn't mean nothing bad.
That's what makes me scared. You don't mean no harm. You don't even know where harm is at. I'm old now. Now, I can't always be guiding your feet from harm and danger. I wants to see you married right away.
Who I'm going to marry offhand like that? I don't know nobody.
The Lord will provide. He know I done bore the burden in the heat of the day. Now, somebody done spoke to me about you long time ago. I ain't said nothing because that wasn't the way I placed you. I wanted you to school out and pick from a higher bush and a sweeter berry, but that ain't your idea, I see.
Nanny, who'd have been asking you for me?
Brother Logan Killix. He's a good man, too.
No, Nanny, no ma'am. Is that what he been hanging around here for? He looked like some old skull head in the graveyard.